Well, good morning and welcome to the Friday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the sixth day of November 2020, and it is my distinct pleasure to be with you on the morning after the night before. Certainly, this has been a year in which we have had much political activity, several elections of the general nature, and indeed, shortly we shall have one of the specific nature. And this is a week that has been like no other in that we've seen an American election, and now we have also seen an election in the Caribbean. History in the making in both regards. In the United States of America, they seldom give a president one term. Jimmy Carter would have been the last one that was truncated in this way. We now have Donald Trump on the cusp of being added to that distinguished group of presidents that can only make one term. And generally, the theory is that you only get one term if you're particularly bad. In the case of Jimmy Carter, he was considered a bad president for reasons that are very different to the presidency of Donald Trump. We use the term active positive and active negative. And I think that Jimmy Carter was the typical active passive negative person, in that it wasn't a whole lot that he did that was wrong, but it wasn't a whole lot that he did, period. Well, we have Donald Trump, who is, I would say, the worst case scenario where active negative is concerned, because it would seem that in a day, 100% of time, 90% is spent doing things which are destructive and negative, and that is the case of Donald Trump. So he is now likely to become a one-term president. The information that I have before me tells me that Biden is now leading in pretty much all of the states that he needs to lead in to get the presidency. So he is leading in Georgia. He is ahead in Nevada. He is ahead now in Pennsylvania. That's the most recent information that came to light. He's ahead in Arizona. Sadly, he is behind in Florida, but that is not likely to change. North Carolina looks as though he is inching in the direction of leading there. He could very well win all of these states. He does not need to win all of them. He just needs to win one, Georgia, and he would be able to make it over the line. Donald Trump, however, if he was able to reverse matters and win a few of these, then he would be in the competition. But unfortunately, Donald Trump is in a situation where he cannot afford to lose Georgia, I would say, is the big prize. So we're going to have a change in presidency, and there's certainly nobody that can be more happy than me. When I was on this program with Corey the day after, I expressed the fact that I was somewhat disappointed in the sense that I was expecting Biden to have streaked ahead almost initially. And I expected that at the end of the night, we would have had a declaration. It was not to be, largely because Biden has relied heavily on the postal votes and the late voting, which is the whole COVID reality. Say what it is a win, and I think it's good that this morning we can celebrate a win and a change that can blow through the White House. I think Biden said once that President Trump had the soul and heart of America, and it was taken in a direction that was entirely negative. And I'm so happy that that situation has been reversed. But closer to home, we have a situation where the Right Honorable Ralph E. Gonzalez has now become the first five-star general ever in the Caribbean. First time in the Caribbean, a single person as prime minister post-independence has won five consecutive terms. Many have come close. Indeed, we had Dr. Denzel Douglas, who won four and collapsed on the fifth. We collapsed politically, not physically. And then we have had several who have won three. We have PJ Patterson, we have Owen Arthur, we have a few. The one in Grenada, Keith Mitchell, Dr. Mitchell, he's also won three. But we've never had a person who has won five before. And there you go. This is Dr. Gonzalez. So certainly congratulations to him and his administration for bringing it home. Certainly it was consistent with my expectations as a pollster. Our feeling was that it would have happened. Our polling was showing that it was likely to have happened. We didn't publish the information, but nonetheless, it was an indicator for us that he was in a better position to have won, or alternatively to maintain the seats. As it worked out, he won an additional seat. So he now goes in with nine, while the opposition is reduced to 6. And I think that that is an outstanding achievement for someone who is on their 5th term to actually be able to gain new ground. The margins were interesting in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and the one seat that he flipped before, he was behind by 13, and now he's ahead by 13. So there's really no significant swing in that constituency. And what I noticed last night was that the swings that were significant occurred in places where they would not have made a difference. So there was a swing against Camilo Gonzalez. It didn't matter because he would have won that seat easily. There were significant swings in the Northern and Southern Grenadines in favor of the two NDP candidates. Again, unsurprising. That often will happen. The overall swing, I'm not yet able to estimate, but those individual movements were significant in my mind. Needless to say, this is what I would like to talk about today for the most part. But of course, you can take me in any direction that you may want to. But I'm certainly very excited about the opportunity to discuss the political machinations of the last 24 hours and the last week. I think one of the things that keeps coming up is this whole question of whether or not a 5-term prime minister is a good thing. And I must tell you that I have my own reservations. I think I've spoken on this program from time to time about the fact that I am not a believer in long terms. I believe that the prime minister should serve for 2 years, 2 terms, and no more, consistent with what the American presidency does. I've seen leaders up close. I've had the good fortune to be close to a couple of them, Dr. Gonzalez included. And in my humble opinion, this is a job which is perhaps one that you should not do for longer than 10 years. I think physically it takes a toll, it's demanding. And it boggles the mind that a person would want to be in that job for longer than 10 years. But nonetheless, we've had several leaders who've wanted to do it, and I say all power to them. Certainly, I wouldn't be in that category, even if I could get elected. But the issue really comes down to one of how we see democracy. And I do feel that democracy and development is better served if you have the opportunity to plan your succession and to encourage people to move on and whatnot. And I do believe that is the right way to go. Having said that, however, I acknowledge the fact that it's not for me to determine. You know, in Grenada, they had a referendum in which they put the idea of a term limit on the ballot paper, and it was rejected by everyone, including the opposition. So clearly, I am in a group of people who believe something and others have the right to believe differently. So 9 minutes after the hour of 10, that's a record for me that I was able to complete my preparatory remarks in less than 10 minutes. Dennis is pleased and he announces his pleasure with the indication that we should down to brass tacks. Remember, you can call us on 434-1790. You can email me directly at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. The chat, 266-IVOB. Dennis is in control of that for the time being. So if you feel you want to abuse me, feel free, because I will have no opportunity to see it for the next few minutes. So take advantage of that. 434-1790, let's say good morning to the first caller. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, morning, sir. How are you doing?
I am high in India.
Good.
I ain't see a sir, man. I'm Tony Wiggins. This sir thing ain't good. I just want to deal with 3 quick things with you.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I know you are a supporter. We had this when the 2016 election came around. The Democratic Party of the United States used to support the KKK, slavery, and segregation. I am sure that you would have known that. There was a senator named Robert Byrd, he's now dead. He was a guru in the KKK. And Mr. Biden and Hillary Clinton were very hurt when he passed away. The same Mr. Biden, you should know that he supported segregation, and his vice president even attacked him on it in the debate. What worked against President Carter was the hostage situation in Iran. And plus, Mr. Reagan outdid him really in the debate. That again, you should have known that. As soon as the Reagan won, the hostages were released. Let me come round now just congratulations to the brother from St. Vincent, Dr. Gonzalez. He had never had any doubt that he would have won. But there's a by-election going on in St. George North. Now, that is one of the parts of St. George where most of my family come from. And I would like you to know also that Cyril Walker is also a Vigans. His mother was a Vigans, but his father was a Walker. And we got a whole set of family in that area from Black Rock all the way across by the school. Cephas is now pastor there. He was a man, had many buses, and used to cut cans for a lot of the people up in there. But let me tell you, Peter, it seemed that one of those candidates, something like it wrong with the outside, but I don't understand. I will be going up in St. George North and actually canvassing on the ground. That is where I'd be going. I'm going in St. George North. Because, you know, sometimes we take some of these things and we don't take them serious enough. I ran twice as a candidate in general elections in Barbados. And neither one of the two times I never tried to make a fool of myself. And I don't understand why some people abuse certain privileges or certain rights, because it's a right that you could also run for the house. And I will hope, Peter, that on the next time you are on, you would focus on the St. George North by election. And you have a good day.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot, Tony. You said a lot of things. I mean, the Democratic Party has a sordid past where slavery is concerned. And they always have to remind people that in the days that the Democratic Party took that position, they interpreted the whole concept of all men are created equal to mean all Black men and not all people. Happily, we have moved on as a society from that level, and the time has long since passed where the Democratic Party, in the United States has now become the progressive force as opposed to the regressive force. So it doesn't make sense repeating that past, because clearly they had a sordid past, and clearly they've now learned the error of their ways. And they tend to be the more progressive party. And that happened, I believe, in the 1970s, where that switch was made. And the conservative party became the Republican Party as opposed to the other way around. You mentioned things about Biden and Biden's history regarding, I think it was this criminal justice bill that he was responsible for. Again, something that I'm familiar with. I think Biden has made peace with the Black people in America. It's clear to me that the level of support that he received, certainly during his nomination, suggests that he has made peace with Black people in America, and he has understood the error of any ways that he may have had. The other thing that you mentioned about relation to the Caribbean and to Barbados and to this by-election. And yeah, I mean, I'm anxious and happy to talk about the by-election any and every time that people want to. It's just that I'm not really sure what more we can talk about, because we're not really supposed to certainly canvass on behalf of one or the other. I tried before nomination day to give as clear as possible a perspective on what I thought would be the outcome based on the political realities in terms of party support and so on. I've also discussed my views on the logic of having someone who is in a trade union involved in politics. And again, that is well known and understood. And I've even talked about the fact that the Democratic Labour Party's choice was a good one under the circumstances, because he also brings a certain level of celebrity. So I think that there's been a balanced perspective in relation to all the situations, and I'm happy to engage any further as needs be. But it's good to hear you back on the program. It's been a while since you've been on, so I look forward to future interaction. Down the brass tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, morning. How are you going, sir?
Not too bad.
Now, I want to deal with three topics this morning. By elections, outdoor toilets, and the Beckles Geriatric Hospital at Beckles. Now, let me start off with by elections. Now, in my mind now, it seems as though in Barbados, it's better to have a by-election than a general election. What do you say about that?
But of course, so it's easier to manage a by-election.
There you have a by-election. You see all sorts of promises and things that could have happened before, couldn't happen, but you're getting them to happen now. I am very sorry that my representative, Rick Caswell, said he was offered to run at St. Thomas. I'm very sorry that Caswell did an injustice to St. Thomas, because they believe that if Caswell had accepted the offer and a by-election to come in St. Thomas, we got some roads away all over by Key and Sealing thing. I believe they would have done because of the by-election. But since there's no by-election, we are suffering.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying? So I feel better to have by-elections now than general elections, because you will get attention being paid to you by the government and power at the BRD. Now, the second one now around is the outdoor toilet, where is a big talk now in the constituency. I would ask both parties to desist from going down that road. This country has a lot of social problems. And as you really check it out, you would hear this party blaming the Democratic Labour Party during the last 10 years. This would give you the impression that the Barbados Labour Party was never in power. And if you check back, you would see that this country suffered that indignity of outdoor toilets. But when you have a child growing up in school now that happened to be falling on the bracket of not having a waterborne toilet, he or she, hearing this talk, is going to be seen as though he is degraded. And I would like both parties to desist from making this a political issue, because it is not going to spell good for those younger kids who happen to grow up in poverty. I would like them to stop it. You are a privileged person, Peter. I grew up with outdoor toilet. Most of the people that today in high positions grew up with it. Could dare. Don't make that an issue to degrade another sector of the community. I'm begging them to put a halt to it.
Don't run. Because I think that we need to talk about this. I'm not going to deny the fact that I grew up with indoor toilets, but I would also not deny the fact that I have used outdoor toilets, because you remember that I went to primary school in an area where there were several kids from the low socioeconomic bracket. So when I go and spend time with my friends in the area, well, that's exactly what you used to go and do, you know. And my mother was always very clear that I can't be calling her from work to carry me home when I go use the toilet. So I always argue that it helps to build constitution. And I think that certainly any child who grew up without having to go and use an outdoor toilet has missed the opportunity to grow, because it definitely builds constitution. Having said that, however, I think that the presence of outdoor toilets in Barbados is a blot on our development. I think that no country that claims to be developed can be having, and what I am told is, 500 outdoor toilets that are still present in Barbados. They need to be brought to an end. I think that the culture of outdoor toilets, the presence of them, is most unfortunate. And I welcome any opportunity and any conversation that will bring it to an end. I'm not saying that the fact that you have an outdoor toilet says anything about you, but I believe the presence of outdoor toilets says a lot about Barbados as a country and our priorities as a nation.
All right.
Because
all right,
I feel that if we can do certain things in relation to building certain infrastructure, if we can have air-conditioned electric buses, we can eradicate outdoor toilets.
So hold on.
It's become an issue now. In the past, they have had more of them. I know that the numbers were reduced under the Democratic Labour Party. The numbers were reduced under the Barbados Labour Party. anytime the conversation comes up, I am glad because I feel the number needs to be reduced further to the point where there are none, right? I know an individual now who I am lobbying on behalf of to get rid of his, because I think that it is unfortunate, especially as you said, he has children at secondary school, the friend's going to want to come home and so on. And I think it is important that that be dealt with, because I don't believe that it is something that we should be having in Barbados. So I welcome the conversation. And the conversation, if it illuminates the fact that we have them present in St. George North, and if by the end of this election, the thought leaves a situation where all the people in St. George North who got outdoor toilets get them fixed, I would be glad. Because it would mean then that when they come up by you in St. Thomas, if they got anybody in St. Thomas with outdoor toilets, you would get yours fixed too. My only regret is that I live in St. Michael Northeast. I don't know if there are any outdoor toilets in St. Michael Northeast, but I don't believe we have enough by election day.
What are you talking about, Peter? Peter, it is better. Listen, that we talk about social understanding about Barbados. There are more people in St. Thomas that own their own land that they could put on water toilet than people in St. Michael. Have you seen the sort of houses in St. Michael that in urban that if you jerk up your finger, it will touch the next house. And those people renting, some people didn't know who the land belongs to. But the point that I'm getting at, Peter, I could give you what I know of. I worked at Rural Development as a field officer 10 years ago. And my going wrong investigating people with assistance with toilets and such like, there is a lot of poor people in Barbados who would like a waterborne toilet, but they don't have a well. I could tell you that I sent in the information pertaining to a lot of people who asked if Rural Development would dig a well and they would pay for it. You know what was the policy? That they could do more or less giving away a water toilet. Many people readily would like to pay to get the well dig, even if they pay for it, an agreement on monthly installment. But you abandoned that because you want to turn the society into a mendicant society. And this is one of the serious problems that go along in this country. Where politicians taking advantage of poor people and want them to be mendicants so that they could drag a net over them and say that the BLP do this for me and the BLP do this for me, and there's no justification for such actions. Lastly, the last thing I want to do with the geriatric hospital that...
All right, hold on a second. Someone has just reminded me that the person who brought up the pit toilet talk was Reefer. Huh? He was the first person that raised the pit toilet talk. And in response, Tony Moore responded, but he was not the person that brought... the person who brought up the pit toilet talk was her.
That is what he saw. That is what he saw, that there's still a lot of people suffering with water toilet. I said, right. I would not like the politicians to go down that road. It's a both.
Okay, so you're right. All right, no problem. Fair enough, but both. All right, so geriatric hospital, you want it move or you don't want it move?
Tell me where you are to move it.
Let me cut to the chase.
Huh?
Tell you what?
What's the reason for moving it? I hearing that they talk about tsunami. That's a tsunami come would affect the geriatric hospital. That we hear too?
Yes.
And you agree with that?
Well, of course, but it would affect the hospital too. When Dovalinus wanted to move the hospital up to Wharton, a big part of the reason he was proposing it was because Wharton was high. And the argument is that whole area, the old hospital site, the new hospital site, that whole area, government headquarters, all down there is essentially in a storm surge area. And if you have a significant storm surge, all of those places will be affected.
All right.
You don't put a hospital there?
All right. I agree with you, Peter. No. Right. Let me finish. I agree with you that is what you would call the charge that was made. Now, when you take down the district hospital, what about all the bailout and them houses going on up there? What are you going to do with them now?
Well, the point is that if you ameliorate a hospital facility that is supposed to provide refuge for people in a time of crisis, Is it not better to do that than to deal with, well, it is better to do that as a priority over a house? Because if a person is facing storm surge, that person can run from the house to a facility like a hospital facility or a shelter. The challenge is that you can't locate public buildings that are normally shelters and refuges in areas where you are likely to have storm surge. So basically, if your house is liable to storm surge, you live in the Bayland, you know that a hurricane is coming, you just got to leave and go inland. The problem is that you can't move the hundreds of people in the geriatric hospital inland as easily.
There's only 200 more people. Now,
they can't walk and things like that.
Nonsensical arguments don't come up. Let me ask you a question. There's more than 200 people between the Bayland and Beckers Road. And if you remove the hospital, all them people who been taking all them people and land the gunny gully, huh? The gunny.
But you hear what I will like. You hear what I tell you. But you hear what I tell like you. They can go. They can go
that
to.
Argument is nonsensical. Come with another issue. It don't make any sense for my little baby that growing up. Now the old man that gonna need to stay at Becker's hospital.
All right.
Because you can't remove a hospital and got the whole of the Bayland, the whole of Becker's Road, all at Colorado Farm, with more people than who in the district hospital. You tell me you move in district hospital. Tell
the logic
is something else different to that. And
Hold on a second.
Uh-huh.
Hold on a second. When we started the conversation, I said to you, you want it move or you don't want it move? What is the reason you don't want it move?
But I tell you, that's nonsense. Nothing is wrong with the district hospital. But you know what's happening in this country? And we are not getting up and looking to see what's happening. As Owen Arthur said, we are going to fetch the highest price for the land. Sooner or later, you're going to force the black people back into the gullies. Because if right now, we in the country that used to keep a little pig or a sheep, you can't keep them. Everything that would affect the poor man of making life, you're bringing the law. Now you're running the poor people that work hard in this country up from Beckles to put a hotel. To put a hotel, you know. We'll come with the truth to the black people in this country. And then we got black people in here joining you talking about Black Lives Matter. And black people in this country don't know what matter to them. I just really started to hear that. You gotta cool down a little bit.
No, okay, you ain't gotta finish. You and I have to have a conversation.
Because,
you gotta cool down a little bit. Before you go there, let me just raise a situation with you, right? Because people talk about, oh, you're gonna put down hotels for white people to come and lay down on and all that kind of thing. And you don't make it seem as though those hotels actually generate substantial foreign exchange to take care of the rest of us. So my position is what? But you hold on. You hold on a second. Just let me build my argument. Right. The geriatric hospital takes care of what we call yesterday's children.
Yeah.
They're in the geriatric hospital. Those people are taken care of at a cost to the taxpayer. Right. And I don't have a difficulty with that because they have to be. The challenge is that the geriatric hospital, as it currently stands, does not generate any kind of income or revenue. Right. However, it is occupying a position that may generate income or revenue if it was used for a different purpose. So my logic is very simple. If you can take the people who are in the geriatric hospital, you can relocate them to another site. You can use that site to generate jobs, foreign exchange, and whatnot. Does it not make sense to do that and use a lot of those resources to help take care of the same old people who are yesterday's children in a manner to which they have become accustomed? To me, the logic is fairly simple. If I own a piece of property, right? And I am fortunate to do so. And someone comes along and they say to me, you know what? I am willing to give you X dollars for your property, which is three times what you currently would have paid for it and you believe it is worth, right? You have the option to say, you know what? I am comfortable. I will enjoy the view myself because in my case, it is a view. It is worth more to me to wake up on the morning and watch that view than for me to take money from you to watch that view. Okay? If I was in a situation where someone came and they said to me, they're going to offer me a fairly attractive price because they prefer my view to me, it is my option to take it. And I think that in a situation where you're dealing with people who are in a geriatric hospital, who are not going to the beach, who are not enjoying the view, why then do they need to be there? And it's the same argument that I was using with government headquarters, because government headquarters is right opposite a beach and nobody ain't coming from a cabinet meeting and going in the sea. So if it is that there is a better use that can be put to the property, I say, well done. That has been my position on it from all the time. And you know, the reality is that up there in the botanical garden, that is a nice kind of place for old people. They can go out there and they can walk about if they can walk. To me, there's really no reason why that area can't be developed in that way. And your valuable property, which is your beachfront property, use it to generate foreign exchange. Final word from you, sir.
No. Nobody here, you finish. And you ain't answer me about the houses up back of the road.